This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for lectures, features, and radio shows. And now, here's Coy Barefoot.
Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, joins us on Tuesday afternoons to talk growth, to talk development. We'll get the very latest on all the big projects going on in our area and find out exactly what's happening. And Brian, you were here when David Hamilton was here, when I was chatting with him just a few minutes ago about Bundoran Farm, which I wanted to have David in to sort of let people know about it, because we've heard about it, but not everybody knows exactly what it is. And I'm so impressed by it because I think it really is a model for how developers can do things differently. And they're really, the crow is really thinking outside the box when it comes to, you know, hey, I'm a developer, what do I want to do with that field? They really are thinking outside the box. Now, let's admit, they're not solving the affordable housing crisis down there, but it is a market approach to preservation.
It's a very interesting concept, and one I think the community is going to watch closely. You know, the Board of Supervisors and the comprehensive plan in Albemarle County, it, of course, says, you know, it wants as little development in the rural countryside as possible. And the reason is that's not where the infrastructure is, whether it's roads, schools, plumbing, you name it. And so, you know, that's, you know, on the downside is that's not where we want development. On the positive side, I think David laid out very well many of the pros about the pattern of development and the fact that they're maintaining a working farm. They've got these easements that protect, you know, the majority of the land. So it's very interesting. And the stewardship, I think, is something that we hear about from rural property owners in Albemarle County. When they come and have concerns in front of the Board of Supervisors, rural property owners typically say, I've been the best steward of my land, you know, for the past 20 years, 50 years, 100 years, however it's been in their family. And I think very much that stewardship is what they're trying to do at Bundoran. I should disclose that one of the realtors working at Bundoran is Steve McLean, who's on Charlottesville Tomorrow's board of directors. And he and I have not really talked about this project, but I did want to disclose that. Certainly not coloring my enthusiasm. I think this is a very interesting endeavor that they've got going on.
Yeah, yeah.
A couple things that he didn't have time to mention that the community should know. This is where the county fair takes place, and that site will be protected as part of this for some period of time. So the county fair will still have a home out there. I was trying to think what else. You know, it's funny, when I've been out there visiting, they mentioned that they had a master plan for the cows. I mean, that's the level of detail they've put into environmental issues. They've engaged the National Audubon Society, and they're really trying to make it a very different kind of development, and primarily different in that it maintains that farm and the housing is dispersed so that it's not McMansions in the middle of a field somewhere.
Yeah, which we see all over the place. I mean, just head out 250.
And the reason has been that's the easy kind of by right development to get done in Albemarle County. Subdivide your property, 21-acre lots, cul-de-sacs, pop houses down in the middle of the field.
And move on.
And that's your development. And they came in and they said, we want to do something really different, Albemarle County, but we're going to need your help. We're going to need some waivers for the different streets we want to put in. And we're going to need to cross some critical slopes. We're going to need to put the houses maybe in places you wouldn't expect, but it's all for a good cause. And I think it is. I mean, I lived on a neighboring farm for a couple of years called Blandemar, and that was before Blandemar was developed. Blandemar is also in that area south of town, and it was a 1,400-acre estate. We rented a, you know, little guest house on the property, and it was like living on Noah's Ark. I mean, the cows would be coming up to the doorstep. you name, you know, the wildlife, it was coming through the farm. So an amazing place to live. I would love to recreate that. And I think what Bundoran is showing is that, you know, for people that can afford it, that there is a way to sort of recreate that bucolic Albemarle County scene, have somebody on site who's running the farm and keeping that part of the operation going, but let everyone enjoy the scenery.
Yeah, yeah, it really is a special place. Brian Wheeler joins us on Tuesday afternoons to talk growth and development. Where should we begin today? What's going on?
We have a whole litany of
things
to
talk
about. There's
a lot of stuff, because you weren't here last week, right?
I wasn't here last week, so let's just talk about a few things, and we'll see what lights up the phones here. you know, we were talking briefly about stream buffers at a, not briefly, we spent a lot of time talking about stream buffers and the different ordinances being changed in Albemarle County.
Yeah, and David Slutsky was in to share his thoughts of why he supported those measures.
And at the February 6th meeting is when the Board of Supervisors passed those ordinance amendments. But interestingly, you know, mid-February on the 13th, they have already started revisiting one of those, and that's the stream buffer issue. And what they heard was some public feedback saying, we're concerned that staff are interpreting this to mean you can't cross the stream, period. If there's a place you can put your house without crossing the stream, then you can't cross the stream. That was the feedback they got at the public hearing. They went ahead and made the change and applied it to the other parts of the county where this was not in effect. But at a meeting that followed that the next week, the supervisor started saying, hey, maybe we need to look at this ordinance again and make sure that that's not really how it's being interpreted. We may need to improve the language. So I think the public should know that some of their feedback about this ordinance, again, parts of this were already in place throughout half the county, but now the supervisors are taking a step back and they're saying, let's look at the language there and make sure that people, you know, do have access to parts of their property, as long as they do what's called a mitigation plan. If you're going to cross a stream, show how you're going to mitigate that by making improvements in other parts.
So I'm confused. So the supervisors are saying under this stream protection ordinance, it will be okay to like build a bridge over a stream to get to a home site you want to have.
That's my understanding, as long as there's a mitigation plan that the county can look at.
What's that
and,
mean?
And approve.
What's that
mean? Well, it might mean that you are improving the stream in other places along your property, so preventing erosion and sediment from getting into the stream in other parts of your property by replanting, by rebuilding parts of the stream bank in those areas.
Right, right. Which is it's not that difficult to do, is it? I mean that.
You know, the Nature Conservancy is doing some of that work right now and really pioneering that in a few places in the county and trying to do some case studies so that everyone here can learn what are the best approaches, best practices for doing this. Again, it all comes to how do we, you know, allow development to occur on private property, but in such a way that we're balancing the environmental protections that are required.
Because we all need that water.
And the sediment,
sorry it runs through your land, but we all use it.
That's right. And the sediment that gets carried in those streams, if it's heading into one of our reservoirs, that's impacting our water supply. So the South Fork Ravana Reservoir, one of our main reservoirs, is currently filling up to the tune of about 1% per year with sediment. And that's something
that's quick.
That was also built back in 1966, and yeah, it's you know, reduces its capacity. So at times of worse drought, that's one of the factors that's playing into this water supply plan. We're losing capacity at South Fork. We need to build, as you've heard me say in the past, a bigger bathtub to store water. That's going to happen at Ragged Mountain, but certainly we need to think about what are the issues with our watershed. And that's why the Board of Supervisors was really interested in this stream buffer issue, setting aside 100 feet on each side of a stream to protect that from development and try to minimize the amount of sediment flowing downstream.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at seavilletomorrow.org.
So speaking of water,
Tom Frederick is going to be on this program on Tuesday, March 11th.
Wow, he's really making the rounds. We've been watching him. We just filmed him this afternoon giving a presentation to the League of Women Voters. So look for that video on seavilletomorrow.org in the coming days. But he's really making the rounds because he has a lot to talk about. And he has a lot to talk about with the water supply plan, with sewer infrastructure. And we covered a meeting, two meetings recently.
Well, and there's that citizens group now. Betty Mooney and Kevin Lynch were in here a few weeks ago. The citizens group is opposing what Tom Frederick is doing. As far as local water is concerned,
they are. And if you want a good rundown of Frederick responding to some of those challenges, we covered a panel last week. There's a group called Advocates for a Sustainable Albemarle Population. They have a monthly meeting, and sometimes they get some very interesting panelists, and we go and record those. So we recorded Tom Frederick and Jeff Werner. Jeff is the field officer with the Piedmont Environmental Council.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's also been on the show. Yeah, Jeff's
the two
great.
Of them were speaking in favor of the water supply plan. And then also on the panel were Rich Collins and Kevin Lynch, two people opposed.
Oh, man. I wish I'd had that here live. So that sounds great.
It's about a two-hour podcast, but I did do a lengthy summary. So there's about four pages you could read through and get the gist of many of the main remarks.
And that's all at seavilletomorrow.org.
It is. It's
you
up
just
on our
click
blog.
On, yeah, on the blog.
Yep. So that, you know, Tom Frederick was there and defending what he thinks is a good plan. Since you had those folks on the show, the permit has been approved by the Department of Environmental Quality. So I know that's something else.
To build a newer, bigger dam at
Ragged Mountain.
At Ragged Mountain.
That's right.
And raise that up to a total of what, 90, 100 feet?
45 feet above its current pool level. I think that the dam would be, I think, 112 feet, but don't quote me on that.
Okay.
So but it'll 45 hold 45 feet higher.
So we're building a much bigger bathtub over there at Ragged Mountain.
That's right.
And we'll have to flood some of the land around it.
That's right.
But wouldn't there just be, you know, some people are upset that the trails around the existing reservoir would be underwater. Wouldn't we just then have new trails that go around the bigger bathtub?
That's true.
I don't want to come down on either side of this thing here because I really don't have a dog in this race, but wouldn't you just have new trails?
You can certainly build new trails, and the building of trails is not the hang up here. I think there's some concern by city residents that they need to be fairly compensated for that land. Two, they want to make sure all the options are on the table. Have you really looked at everything else that could be done before you start cutting down 50,000 trees?
And they had a good point about the dredging.
And dredging is one of those options.
They don't feel like dredging North Fork has ever really been seriously pursued.
That's right. And Tom Frederick, I'm sure, can respond to that when he's on your program. He certainly talked about it the other night.
Good, good. Well, he'll be on this program on March 11th, and maybe we can get some of the audio from your panel discussion that the citizens group had, and,
sure.
And we'll play some of that on here. That'd be good.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. If you like the show, please tell a friend. And if you're subscribing to us through iTunes, consider writing a review. Now, back to the show.
Doug Smith will also join us, also a graduate of the Sorensen Institute. He's the executive director of the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy in Richmond, and he has some big news about RichmondSunlight.com, which we'll break right now, I guess. Have you noticed their latest feature?
I know. There's a video.
There is video
is
for the first time.
Is that what you're going to break?
There for the first time in the history of the Commonwealth of Virginia, the videotaped proceedings of our state assembly are now more accessible to people than ever before. You can go to RichmondSunlight.com and actually watch the House of Delegates and watch the Senate, we haven't been able to do that unless you wanted to go to Richmond and pick up a DVD.
I have not clicked on one of the links. I did see them start showing up in Richmond Sunlight, yeah. And I saw that Waldo was describing on his blog, Waldo Jaquith, how he went down to Richmond, grabbed all the video, and basically drove it back to Charlottesville.
And ripped it all off the DVD
and
posted it.
Just, you know, got all his computers working on it at once. And
yeah.
I don't know what keeps him running, but thank goodness he does.
Yeah, it's all through Google Video, which y'all use at Seville Tomorrow, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's free. And, you know, Google basically, their policy is if you have video, we'll give you a place to put it. I mean, they're just building this huge library and they don't care how big it is or what it's about.
Yeah, it's a fantastic resource. You can store it on their servers and then have access to it and put the player on your site, on your website, so folks can watch it right there.
And I think it's really important in Richmond in particular because you've had I guess the Senate has been televised, correct me if I'm wrong, in-house. You could watch it
in your office,
closed circuit in the building.
Yeah.
Having some of that available is great. But I guess the House of Delegates has never allowed filming in the chamber.
Yeah.
And now what I think they're doing is taking independent films that are being made. Is that right?
No, they have videotape the proceedings.
Just nobody's able to watch it outside the building.
Yeah, you can't really watch it unless you want to go down and get a DVD or sit in somebody's office. You have never been able to see it. And now you can just, in the comfort of your own home, you can watch what your delegate is doing for the first time. It truly is sunlight on government. I'm a big fan of that.
Well, I can tell I've got plenty of video to watch here locally, so I'm not sure I'm going to be tuning into that. But
talk about sunlight on government, Charlottesville tomorrow. This is the just exact kind of stuff you do here on a local level.
Yeah, and I can't imagine doing it on that level with that much video. But we do enjoy doing that. One of the things we were covering yesterday in audio form, and the story will be up on our blog momentarily if Sean Tubbs has not already put it up there. But the Ravana Water and Sewer Authority had a meeting yesterday. Go back to Tom Frederick briefly and just point out that our reservoirs are full for the first time since last, I want to say, June.
That's a big deal.
Yeah. So we sent out an email on Monday that had a picture of the water flowing over the top of one of the dams. I thought that would be a good message. But they are still concerned about stream flows, which are below normal. So we're going to have to keep an eye on this heading into the summer. But the news at that meeting had to do with, again, paying for infrastructure. And one of the big things that they've got on their capital project plan is upgrading the Moores Creek Wastewater Treatment Facility. And if you need to know what that is the place where basically all the poo goes in Charlottesville and the urban area and even Crozet.
Yeah, that was amazing when I found that out. Yeah, I knew that. When you flush your toilet out in Crozet,
it's piped into
it goes all the way to Charlottesville to get cleaned up, yep. I guess, before it goes into the river.
That's right.
Hopefully cleaned up before it goes
in. And we need to make some big upgrades there to remove more nutrients from the effluent, I think, are the appropriate words to use.
Is the effluent still a little too dirty for the river?
Yeah. The Chesapeake Bay folks would like it to be a little cleaner, so that when it finally makes its way down to the bay, it'd have as few nutrients as possible and be as clean as possible.
Right,
but to
right.
do that, the previous estimate was about $35 million, and now they announced this week it's going to be up to $41 million. As they're refining this project and getting the engineering started and figuring out exactly what they need, which components they want, the price has gone up. So that's something the community needs to think about. RWSA is now advertising the water and sewer rates that'll pay for some of these projects. Percentage-wise, they've gone up a fair amount, but it's pennies. I don't think it's dollars on your rate.
But still, at the end of the day, if you're still living here 10 years from now, we're going to be paying a whole lot more for our water, aren't we? Because of what they have to do?
We are going to be paying more.
Have we been spoiled, Brian? I mean, have we just gotten spoiled and used to not paying much for our water when most folks do?
Well, I think some people would say that. And there were comments made at this meeting I talked about in the previous segment last week at the ASAP panel, which had a panel on the water supply. And some people said, one of the panelists, I can't remember which, said, you know, people look at our community and say, how do you pay so little for water and sewer? And I think our infrastructure is catching up with us. It needs repairs, it needs replacement, and it needs to be expanded to accommodate growth. This is not just a growth problem. It's a existing infrastructure problem
as well. It's an old pipes problem.
So we need to take care of both.
Now, speaking of old pipes, isn't there, what's that place up in North 29 that they discovered wasn't big enough for all the sewers and all the development on 29 North?
Yeah, that was the Camelot Wastewater Treatment Plant, and you may remember that we broke that story about North Point. There was a developer for part of the North Point development, which is up past Airport Road on 29 North. It's on the right side if you're heading north, and it has not started yet, really, but that's where it'll be. And one of the builders wanted to get started on part of that project, and he was told no, that Camelot didn't have any capacity to treat any more sewer coming out of that development.
So the Board of Supervisors say yes, you can build that there, and then they go to build it, and then the sewer people say, no, you
well,
can't.
Well, not exactly. The sewer people say all along they've said, you can't send it this way. Now, the devil's in the details, and people can agree to disagree on whether that was the case or not, but we won't get into that. Certainly, some people thought it was going to gravity flow over to Camelot. Camelot does not have the capacity, period. So North Point can't be helped at this point by Camelot. However, what we learned this week at the RWSA board meeting was that Camelot will get about $400,000 in upgrades just to get by. And that'll allow Briarwood, which is a nearby subdivision, to continue to go there. The North Fork Research Park feeds into Camelot, so that's the UVA's research park. And then Wendell Wood has got some commercial offices coming in near the National Ground Intelligence Center, and that'll be allowed to be serviced by Camelot. So Camelot's getting basically a $400,000 Band-Aid to get by until they can shut it down and build this new North Point pump station, which will then service the North Point development and all these other users. And
Where does it send it, though?
Well, it's, send it into Charlottesville to Morris Creek. Of course, Coy, everything goes to Morris Creek. But the thing is, the Ravana Station Military Base, also known as NGIC, National Ground Intelligence Center, in order for it to expand, it needs this North Point pump station as well. So anyway, big expense.
Are all these developers paying in to help build this new pump station?
Well,
hello, or are we just this?
I think they're at the negotiating table that right now.
Yeah.
This is not a case where there was a specific proffer that I'm aware of to do this. I can't think of one. If somebody may call here any second and say, oh, in North Point, we agreed to do this such and such. I don't remember that.
Okay.
That said, you know, typically the water sewer stuff is taken care of by not Albemarle County, because Albemarle County gets the rezoning, but they're not responsible, they say, for...
It's the authority.
It's the authority.
This is the water and sewer
right.
authority.
So it's the hookup fees and the rates that cover the infrastructure for water and sewer.
Okay.
And this is what's happening at Albemarle Place. You know, Albemarle Place at Hydraulic and 29 delayed because there was not sewer capacity. And now apparently there's new ownership there. They hope to be on track for 2009 to be able to hook up to an expanded system. But again, you know, you can point to any part of Charlottesville and Tom Frederick is concerned about, you know, the sewer capacity and the plant that's going to receive all this stuff.
Because the growth has far outstripped the capacity of all these sewers that are in the ground.
Well, at this point, it's the growth that's going to come. In some cases, it's proposed growth. So Albemarle Place, no, there's no toilets there yet. They're being told you can't build until we have more capacity.
Right.
Same thing in North Point. So in some cases, there's a big pipeline of things that have been approved but not built yet. And I think that's certainly a concern for the authority. They want to have adequate capacity in places like Biscuit Run. Biscuit Run came later when these questions were all on the table. Biscuit Run did promise to do some upgrades to handle their needs. Same with Hollymead Town Center. Hollymead Town Center, part of that residential development, they said, we'll pay our fair share of this.
Yeah.
So the most recent developments have come to the table and say, of course, we'll pay what we have to do so that we can develop.
Right, right.
You know, why wouldn't we?
But some of the older ones...
Some of the older ones, these questions weren't being raised. And so, you know, I think the Ravana Water and Sewer Authority, again, is dealing with both infrastructure that's failing. They've got sewer pipes that are sucking in water, natural water in the ground. And when that happens,
jeez,
or in a rain event, if you get some heavy, you know, water coming into the groundwater and it gets sucked into the pipes, guess what? We have to treat that because it's being pumped over to Morris Creek.
So we're just treating groundwater.
We're treating groundwater.
As if it's sewage.
And so
because
that,
the pipes are busted.
That's right. So that's a problem in both the city of Charlottesville and Albemarle County. And both localities and the RWSA are all trying to figure out how we're going to pay for this. Their capital budget is coming up for review. Their rates are going to be up for a public hearing. So the public can give feedback on this. But one way or the other, we're going to be building a lot of stuff.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow online at seavilletomorrow.org. What's all this about the bridge in Advance Mills? Those poor folks out there, are they ever going to get a bridge?
You know, I learned about that on WINA today.
WINA rocks.
WINA is reporting that the temporary bridge at Advance Mills may not be happening after all. That bridge was closed last year because of safety concerns.
Yeah. You ever driven across that bridge?
I have.
I'm glad they closed that bridge.
Well, and apparently a lot of trucks, even though it said, you know, no trucks allowed, a lot of trucks used it.
I've been over that bridge in a packed U-Haul, and it was the scariest bridge trip I've ever had.
Well, you're part of the problem.
Many years ago.
That bridge is not meant for those things and now has been closed permanently. So the question for the community is, can we get a temporary bridge put in right away to restore access for school buses, rescue squad, people getting to work, whatever.
Yeah.
Church, you know, there's an interesting problem with some of the churches there. They're saying they're on one side of the river and they're saying our membership's not coming anymore because they can't get here easily.
Oh, man.
So we've heard some of those stories. But apparently, you know, there's a battle between the Federal Highway Administration and VDOT about paying for this, and can there be two projects looked at, you know, independently, you know, having a temporary bridge and then building a permanent one. And it sounds like this ping pong has now bounced back. I'm sure Ann Malik, the supervisor representing the Whitehall District, I've seen her quoted in another news source Actually, no, that was WINA too, that she's going to continue to explore every option. So this will be an ongoing discussion. The first board meeting of the Board of Supervisors each month has a transportation update, so we'll get an update there.
And, of course, this raises the whole issue of transportation funds, which it continues to that money continues to disappear, doesn't it?
Well,
what little was there in the first place?
We put up a story this week, or late last week, that the VDOT chief financial officer, her name is Rita Buescher, has announced that they're projecting a 44% reduction in the amount of money available for road construction projects over the next 6 years.
That's at state level.
Yes, but that's how we build. That's how we're supposed to build our roads here locally.
Yeah.
So you've heard about the 6 year plan, which everyone laughs when you say 6 year plan. Because there's lots of, you know, there's 70 projects on our local Albemarle County secondary road 6 year plan.
Yeah. That's a 600 year plan.
The top three are Meadow Creek Parkway, Jarman's Gap Road, and Georgetown Road. Top three projects on the 6 year plan. They've all been on there much more than 6 years.
And there's just no money for them.
Well, and it's decreasing. So that's the news from VDOT. Expect that number to go down.
Golly.
So are we gonna
have a local authority, right? Isn't that there's talk now that we'll have a local authority that might go to Richmond one day and say, you know, Central Virginia needs to have its own road tax.
That's right. We are looking at a regional transit authority. Now, the question is it going to be a regional transit authority or regional transportation authority? So the difference would be transit is buses, bus rapid transit, trolleys, alternatives to cars on the road.
Yeah.
Transportation authority could encompass raising funds for building roads. People in the city and the county may have different views of that, and there's going to have to be a meeting of the minds before they go to the General Assembly to explain exactly what they're trying to build. But it initially started as regional transit authority. David Slutsky, the supervisor from the Rio District, originally framed it that way. Let's figure out how we can do bus rapid transit up 29 North.
Get everybody on the same page as far as buses and that kind of stuff.
But I'll tell you, when our supervisors sit down with VDOT at these what are called the Metropolitan Planning Organization meetings, at the one I was at recently last month, they said to the VDOT guys, hey, listen, we're setting aside as much money as we can for Georgetown Road, Jarman's Gap Road. They're not getting built. Why are they not getting built? And they said, well, we've got other projects in the pipeline. We're trying to spread our resources out here. And finally, Dennis Rooker from the Jack Jewett District just said, how about we build it for you? And they were like, great idea. How can we help? And so the VDOT said, we'll take care of the right-of-way acquisition. We'll take care of all the legal work to get the right-of-way if you'll start taking over the engineering and construction.
Wow.
So Albemarle County
is being forced to
start doing that. Now, that who's going to pay for that? Well, we'll get some money from the state, but as I just said, a declining amount over the next 6 years. So that means our Board of Supervisors will have to make that up somehow. They'll have to make it up with a bond referendum. They'll have to make it up with property taxes. As you mentioned, maybe down the road,
a new regional tax.
Maybe there'll be some way to levy a local gas tax or a local sales tax that could fund some of these transportation
projects.
Because
if Richmond's not doing it, if the anti-tax crowd still holds the day in Richmond, these projects still need to get done. I mean, you can't just keep looking the other way and saying, no, we don't need that.
And the inflation cost is another thing that stops these projects from starting. Every year it gets more expensive to build them, and the rate of inflation, it drives the cost up much faster than the money coming in from the state to keep those pots full.
Well, speaking of all of this, one great example is the Meadow Creek Parkway. And you said you went to a meeting today about that?
That's right. This is a interesting group. We mentioned Rich Collins earlier. He's involved with this group. There's been a long set of meetings about the Meadow Creek Parkway interchange, 250 and the future Meadow Creek Parkway. And there's a steering committee working on that. What's interesting is another group has started meeting to talk about the historic resources potentially being impacted by building this interchange. So you got the golf course at McIntyre Park. You got the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. You've got Rock Creek landscape and gardens over there from an old facility that was along there. And I'm not knowledgeable enough to talk about it. But there's some key historic resources. There's a group of residents that have come forward and said, we're very concerned about this, and they've invoked what's called a Section 106 review. So this requires
Section 106 review.
Yes, you know what that means. That means no, a whole lot of people at a whole lot of meetings.
So another yet looks like the parkway is yet even delayed still.
Well, it is being delayed right now as they go through this process. Now, this is not the parkway again. It's just the interchange.
But
what they're having to do is figure out. And what's frustrating for people like Dan Bluestone and Rich Collins, who are some of the players here, they're very frustrated that this didn't come up in the beginning. Their basic point is, when you started this process, you should have figured out there were some historic resources here, and you should have factored that into the different alternatives you were looking at as far as how to build this transportation project.
That makes sense.
It's now come in late. They've already got some alternatives that the steering committee likes that they want to get in front of city council. And the question is, how much time and how much impact can these citizens have shaping the final outcome and trying to protect these historic resources?
You can learn more online at SeavilleTomorrow.org. Brian, thank you very much.
Thank you, Coy.
As always, y'all have a great night.
You've been listening to WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. The show is on the air Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 in the afternoon. Join in on the show by calling 434-977-1070 or feel free to leave a comment on the show at SeavillePodcast.com. This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network.